Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Today on Rambling About Cars, sayonara NSX, but we get a Type S before that happens. Ford Bronco, few quality control issues going on there, and some NSX has its just a few teething issues that we're going to have to talk about, but NSX has us all nostalgic for Japanese performance cars that we want to see back, so turbocharged tuners, it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith. Across the way, Mr. Chris Bruce. What's shaking?
Not much. We got a special guest this time. Technically, he has been on our show before, but it was on the pilot that has never aired. So,
yes, we did a pilot episode. Can you believe that?
We did two pilots, to be fair.
You know what? Quality control guy. Honestly, I just make the pancakes around here.
Who's our special guest, Bruce?
This would be Clint Simone, who is Motor One's director of video. And do you have any other titles throw in
there? No. I stick with that one generally. I'm the consultant for all things Taco Bell and anything else, but maybe I shouldn't mention too many things to garner hate in the first minute or two.
Yeah.
So let's stick with video because that's what I love.
Master of ceremonies. Yeah. You should have been on the show a long time ago.
Absolutely.
Clint actually does a lot behind the scenes for Rambling About Cars. So this is long overdue. And he also actually knows a lot about cars. So there is some relevance here.
Yeah, let's put that to the test. I'm excited about today's topics. I feel like I can attribute some things that are good, but I guess that remains to be seen.
Oh, so. The worse it is, the better, usually.
That's right.
That seems to be the way it goes. So, sorry, Bruce, we're jumping all over you, man. Lead us off. What do we got going on here?
No, so we are talking about the Acura NSX, the second, third generation, depending on how you want to look at it. It had that refresh there in the middle of the first gen that kind of, not sure what it is, but it's dead.
It's not yet, going out with a bang. It is, yeah. Which, hey, I can get behind that.
Yeah, so we are getting, as you can see, anyone watching on YouTube right now can see, we are getting an NSX Type S, which is a moniker that it wore in Japan back in the day. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be kind of the farewell, like you put it, the sayonara. We don't know much about it yet, or I should say I know. I think Clint might know a little bit more than me, I think, possibly, or depending on what he can say. But, you know, we know it's going to be special. The stuff I've been hearing is that it's probably going to have more power, going to be limited to 350 units. Mm-hmm. I think 20 of those for Japan and the 30. Rest for the rest. 30 for Japan. Okay.
30 for Japan. Wow.
And the rest for the rest of the world. So
we'll what a switch because... I mean, this is the first time NSX Type S has been offered outside of Japan.
Correct.
The first one, the first generation, it was Japan only. So, I mean, it's kind of neat that I feel like US is getting a little bit of love here for the NSX. And it debuts, we should point out, we just have teasers right now. The car debuts August 12th, I believe, during Monterey Car Week.
Yeah, it'll be evening of the 12th or on the 13th, and this will be a chance to pre-plug it. I'm going to film with the car that day, too, so we'll have a first look video going up on that day, the 13th, and it'll be our first chance to see it up close and see some of the modifications that they've done to it. I guess I should start by saying them announcing this car has revived everybody's opinions on the NSX, and I love that car. I love that car so much. It is hyper criticized for being too boring and some people don't like the looks and this and that, but it is so approachable and so easy to love and understand. And it has reliability because it's basically ripped from the MDX hybrid if you trace it in weird directions.
Yeah, that's sort of, yeah.
In weird sort of like extraneous ways, but you know what? It has like, it is classic Honda and how they did this thing. And I love that they went ahead and did a Type S. We've been chasing rumors for probably 2 or 3 years now that they were going to do a more powerful version or a hopped up version. But the reality is they don't sell that many of these things. So this is a way to let it bow out with grace. And I'm excited. I'm so excited to see it in person. And they're going to auction off the first one for charity. That's all we know so far.
Yep.
Yeah. And now, you know, it's interesting. And I just want to circle back to something you said, Clint, about how this kind of revitalized NSX. It's almost like it reminded people that the car exists. Yes. And it's interesting to me because that's existed since it first debuted. If you remember, it was, I think, was it 2015 or 2016 at the Detroit Auto Show? NSX was supposed to be a big deal, and it was. But then here comes Ford. Oh, by the way, check out our new Ford GT. And it completely overshadowed NSX.
Yeah.
And it's tragic that it did that because NSX is a fantastic car. And I almost feel like Honda never really recovered from that. I don't think Honda knew that Ford was going to be there with the GT.
No.
If I remember correctly, nobody knew Ford was going to be there.
Yeah, they built it in a basement. Didn't tell anybody they were doing it.
Yeah, and it was just like, I mean, if I was Acura Honda, I would still be ticked off by that. Just the way that thunder was stolen. So when you say it sort of revitalized NSX, I mean, should Honda have done this maybe 2 or 3 years ago instead of waiting till now?
Yes, they should have.
Here's my first conspiracy theory of the evening, and I'm sure somebody can prove it wrong. This seems to me like they chose to do it rather last minute. I think that they said, we have Type S. We're going to stick it on TLX. We're going to stick it on everything else that we make. Type S, go team, rah, rah, rah. And now they're saying, how can we do this as cheaply as possible, knowing that, you know, we're going to sell out the run. But, you know, they're doing basically a front bumper, a rear bumper from what it looks like. I bet you they squeezed a little bit more juice out of the electric motors, but probably didn't cost too much money. And though I cannot confirm this, I wouldn't expect to see much different going on in the interior. So this is a way to give it new life, but probably do it in a way that's still efficient, where they can still do it in the same factory without needing to retool a bunch of things. But with those modifications, I bet they were able to sneak in this idea within the last 2 years and let it bow out like that. But I'm okay with it. A 5-year run for this car is fine. The GTR has a planned 15-year run. So in comparison to other Japanese cars we might be talking about, this thing is brand new.
I feel like after its debut was unfortunately overshadowed, because I agree. I think it's a fantastic car. I don't think it's conservative. I know some people say, it's kind of conservative. And it's the hybrid. You know, bull crap. That's the PG version. It's a fantastic supercar that you can drive every day that is actually decent on gas. And I feel like if I was Acura, I would have done a Type S a long time ago to kind of help overshadow the overshadow that took place when it launched. And now, instead of a Type S, they could be sending it out with a Type R, right?
Well, Type R, this was a big point of contention. When they showed us Type R, Civic Type R Limited, that yellow thing that they put around racetracks very quickly, that's when they first told us, absolutely, no questions asked, Acura will not use Type R. That is for Honda. And Type R is meant to be like race, go, 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 boom, boom, boom. Type S is supposed to be a balance of luxury and performance. I sound like a PR person, but that's from the Acura Honda side of things.
Definitely sound like a PR person.
But if I'm not mistaken, I think the first gen was a Type R in Japan. Is that correct?
There was both a Type S and a Type R. Type R.
Okay. Because I was going to say, has this ever actually worn a Type S badge, or is this the first time? Did it only wear
both? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
That'll be exciting. But when you trace back NSX to what it's done in the past, this whole hybrid setup for a supercar, it had everybody beat by a couple of years.
Yeah.
And the only things now that have it to some extent are a Ferrari SF90, which is 10 times the cost, and Porsche 918 similarly.
Well, they're only going to make 350 of these all total.
Yeah.
And we know that production will end next December. So December 2022. Man, are we talking about 2022 already? Seriously, we need to slow things down a little bit just so we can have more time with the NSX. Production is going to wrap up December 2022. And yeah, that'll be it. Do we think Acura is going to have anything to replace it?
That's a good question. If you look at the press release, and here's where I try to see how people are careful with words. They say that this is the end of the second generation NSX. They don't say NSX categorically. Mm-hmm. So that leaves it on the table. Things are going electric. People get excited when formerly gas things become all electric. Who knows? Acura, I don't even think, has a laid out plan for their first EV in the coming years, but that would be a hell of a way to get a cool halo car out of it when the time comes.
Yep. So for anyone watching on YouTube, this was the original Type S that we're looking at on YouTube mm-hmm. now. So a few things to add from my perspective. First off, so I was kind of born and raised in Ohio. For anyone who doesn't know, the current NSX is made in Marysville, Ohio, which for me to get from where I live to my mother-in-law's house, I literally drive through Marysville. So I don't have a direct connection, but I kind of feel like, oh, I drive through there. I know where that car is made. And I always liked the NSX, and I always kind of thought it was a shame that it wasn't more popular. And I remember I was at the Detroit Auto Show when the NSX debuted, the production version. And even then, there wasn't that much interest in it, not only because the GT, but I don't know if you guys remember this, but Acura had a, or Honda had a full powertrain practically ready for it
and ready then to go.
Scrapped it
yeah.
and had to re-engineer the car and delayed it a bunch. And I just wonder if it hadn't been for that delay, would we be saying, would it have been much more successful than it ended up being?
It was probably an extra 2 years on the planning exactly time, I think. It was something like that.
Yeah.
It's a weirdo. It's a weirdo supercar that doesn't have the badge appeal of a McLaren or a Ferrari. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. But what I do hope is that they get rid of the damn beak on the front of it and they make it look better from the front. I think it's going to have a larger, you know, gaping mouth like most cars do right now. But they do the front and the rear bumpers the right way, they can give it some extra appeal. And maybe this one will stick on like the first one couldn't.
Also, before we transition or anything, let's just take a moment and look at the original NSX Type R. That white, just tell me, am I wrong here? That's gorgeous.
It is. It totally is. I don't like white generally on cars, and I always liked the contrast with the white and the black there. Kind of like last week when we were talking about the 80s and 90s stuff mm-hmm. with the Subaru SVX, the way you get that contrast with the white and then the black up top. Yeah, that looks really good. Clint, I think you touched on something that a lot of people maybe don't want to talk about, is that at the end of the day, I mean, we are still talking about basically a Honda vehicle. And I think that stigma sucks because it's such yeah. a great supercar, and a lot of people will dismiss it because it doesn't have the Ferrari badge or the Lamborghini or the McLaren badge. And I mean, I think the original NSX was subjected to that as well. And
right,
you know what? It just makes it more special for me.
But I think the other thing, you know, we can debate what importance motorsport plays in selling cars. But the thing is that with the original NSX, I can't remember, it either took a class win at Le Mans or it very nearly took a class win at Le Mans. It was very competitive there regardless. So I wonder how much that helped build the mythos around that car, that it was something that was truly competitive. Whereas, I mean, Acura did do kind of GT3 and they raced it, but it was never at that top realm of competition.
And it couldn't race with the hybrid system either.
Yeah, that too, because of just the way the rules were at the time. These yeah. days, you know, things are different, but yeah.
Or at least getting there. But in the IMSA series, I believe the NSX GT3 cars can't even run with the hybrid system. So yeah,
you're absolutely right.
It's like ripping some of the guts out of it. I remember like I was so excited to drive that car for the first time. And admittedly, like sometimes you get in a supercar if we're lucky enough to drive them and they just intimidate the crap out of you. But there's something so approachable to that. And then the first time it cuts out at a stoplight and goes in EV, you're like, this is great. This is the coolest thing ever. And as Chris said earlier, you can do 19 or 20 miles to the gallon and the truck you drive every day does worse.
It definitely does worse. And you've had a chance to drive it. That's something that I haven't had a chance to do. Bruce, I don't know if you've had a chance to drive one.
I have not, unfortunately. I wish I had.
I mean, can you share with our listeners, Clint, just a little bit more of your driving impression?
It was beyond cool, and we got one that was close to its base price. I've been around two in the past for Motor One. We've done video on one of them if you want to check it out on the YouTube channel. That was a 2019 model year, and that had like $8,000 in carbon fiber, carbon ceramic brakes. I mean, it was full supercar spec, a ton of money. And then we got a second one, that conspiracy theory number two. I think they built to make it more comparable to the C8 because that was brand new at the time. And I think a lot of media outlets were saying, hey, I'm going to take that NSX and put it up against that Corvette, which is a lot cheaper. So I think Acura built one out that was basically bare bones. And that one was extremely lovable. The brakes were still fantastic. The powertrain is obviously still good. The carbon fiber was frivolous anyway, and it was in sort of odd places. But just at its base, the core of that car is so fun. People who have far and away more driving experience than me say that it's boring compared to other things, but I think it's plenty lively. And I think that theater of the car turning off and turning on and having like distinctly different driving modes that work with the electric motors is an absolute thrill. And I think it's going to last. I think it's going to last over time. Oh, man, you're going back into the archives now.
So this is from 2019. Is this the super nice one or is this the cheap one?
This is a nice one. And as the man who is behind the camera in this one, I can ad lib on Jeff's behalf right now. We started the film talking about the LaFerrari because that was right next to that car, and basically said that, you know, the bare bones of what makes an NSX is the guts that are inside of a LaFerrari. The SF90 wasn't around at the time, but it was also true of the LaFerrari, which is seven figures, you know, that the idea of a hybridized supercar was really manifested in the NSX.
Cool. You were talking about the video, so I wanted to make sure, give you a little plug there.
No, I appreciate that. That was
we should plug that into the article that goes out on Friday at Motor1.com. If you want to see a little bit more about our history with the NSX and specifically Clint and senior editor Jeff Perez, their history with the NSX.
I'm not going to pretend like I'll ever have enough money to buy one, though I can think optimistically. I wonder what will happen to these prices over time if people say, because I don't think the maintenance would be absolutely wild on them, especially if you go for one without carbon ceramic brakes. I don't know what component would be the most expensive thing if it blew, but I think overall that engine and those electric components can stand the test of time too.
Yeah, I don't think maintenance is going to be an issue. And I think prices, I don't see prices going down very far just because they haven't made very many. They haven't sold many. The people that love it, I mean, you're going to have to get in line and get a ticket and wait for somebody to sell one.
Yeah, they're going to be super those prices, collectible too.
Yeah, I don't think the prices are going to go down.
So before we transition to our other topic real quick, I just wanted to point this out. So we have been talking about different variants of the NSX for quite a while. Clint, you were saying 2 or 3 years. Buddy, I got to show you. So this is a story. NSX chief engineer hints at hotter Type R version.
What this year are we talking?
Is from 2015. And I will go ahead and read the quote. Let me find it. So this is from Auto Express. They talked to Ted Klaus, who is the chief engineer. I think everyone who loves cars wants to see a version that we say is pure red. Adding that to the original NSX was initially silver before moving towards red later. So this is the chief engineer in 2015 saying he wants a Type R, and it just never happened.
There was a rumor that we chased before the Tokyo Motor Show in 2019, definitely pre-pandemic. My brain is scrambled eggs. And I was going to the Tokyo Motor Show, and we had chased some rumor that there was going to be a hotter version that debuted there. And I was on the phone with any source that I did have, and kind of referring back to what Chris Bruce said earlier, is they make the car in Ohio. If Japan was going to do something with the car, the U.S. would have known about it because they would have needed a donor car to work on. And nobody in Ohio had any idea that a hotter one was coming. So I would wager that in 2018, 2019, this car didn't exist. And that goes along with my first conspiracy that they decided to do this rather late in the game. But I'm not mad about it. I think it's a great way to let this car go out with a little bit of a bang, which it deserves. Yeah. I would hate to see an article, Acura killed off the NSX, because we know we would write it and we know that a lot of people would click on it, but not giving the car any extra mojo at the end would have sucked.
Yeah.
Yep. Just one day saying, what was it? We found out this week through a supplier. The automaker, I can't even remember. I wrote the article and I can't even remember it. How bad is that?
Avalon?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Clint. Avalon. Toyota
Every
Avalon.
Grandparent in America is upset with you right now. Do you know that? Including my grandparent.
And our coworker, Jeff Perez.
And yeah. Jeff Perez. Yes. Yeah. I mean, could you imagine finding out about it that way? Acura sends a message to its suppliers saying, we're actually going to end production of the car, so you don't need to worry about building these parts anymore. That would be such a sad way to go.
I know.
That's a sad way to go for Avalon, too. They come out with a TRD. It's kind of cool, but...
Speaking of building and producing cars, we need to talk about a car that is currently building, but being built and currently being delivered to dealers and kind of the very first wave and is having a few issues. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that, Smith?
I mean... Yeah, we can talk a little bit about it here.
What is this mystery vehicle?
And it rhymes with Anko.
I have no clue what you're talking about. I've never heard of such a thing.
So I'm going to start this off by saying just about every brand new vehicle in its first year, you're going to have some minor issues. And that's really what these are. But
yeah.
We have to talk about Ford Bronco because it's Ford Bronco, and the hype for this vehicle has just been off the scale. Ford is trying to build as many as they can. They've been turning their reservations into sales at very impressive rates. We've been just the last couple of weeks, I think, Bruce, we've had issues with.
We've had four reports, three of which are about the roof in some aspect.
Yeah. The soft top being rubbed through the soft top rubbing against the roll bar, taking the paint off.
Yep.
Article that I wrote here, I can share this up here really quick.
In the meantime, I'll plug my friends at TFL Off-Road, their channel. They bought one.
Yeah. I saw that they bought one.
The roof makes all sorts of noise. My good friend,
lots of noise.
Tommy in that video is, you know, reporting it. It doesn't stop making noise. When we drove it for the first time on the media drive, there was enough wind noise that I felt like I was driving along in like a tent on the highway. And the engineer said that the car we were in was an anomaly and that we shouldn't expect that out of the production car. But I don't know how much I believe that now.
So, I mean, the article that I wrote that had a lot of attention over the weekend. There's whistling noises kind of going along with what you just said, Clint. Yeah. Whistling noises. And I was trying to do just a little bit of backstory, a little bit of research. It looks like there's a couple areas that are being looked at least from owners. I got confirmation from Ford that they're doing something with the grill. Apparently the grill on certain models, and I'm going to have to look at the article to remember exactly which models here.
I was thinking the whistling issue is something about the side mirrors or my,
there's another issue like that.
There are two whistles.
So Ford issued a TSB that the whistling due to a seal around the grill applies to the Bronco Big Bend and Outer Banks trim levels, presumably because they have a specific grill design. Apparently air is getting in through there and it's doing its magic dance around this hood seal, which then makes a noise. That's my impersonation of a Bronco whistling.
That's good.
It's totally not. I got to get a better filter here. But there's a TSB on that, and they're supposedly working on a new seal. But there's another issue that Bronco owners have been talking about relating, Bruce, like you said, to the side mirrors. And that seems to be more of an issue that I've been seeing at forums people talking about, because they can actually move the mirror. They can put their hand in front of the mirror and get it to stop. And it seems like some of them have pinpointed it down to little gaps in the mirror where air is apparently going. The mirrors weren't put together quite as well as they should have been, I guess. They're putting pieces of tape over the gaps in the mirror, mm-hmm. wiping out the whistling noise. And there was at least one video that I heard where you hear a whistling noise. I think it started up about 70 miles an hour highway speed. And I mean, it wasn't blasting your ears, but it was clearly audible in the video. And it would drive me mad if I had a whistle like that. So, I mean, there's the whistling, there's the holes being rubbed into the roof. I mean, there's just a lot of little issues cropping up here.
So here's what I would have to say about that, though, is that it's the issue of being an early adopter. And, you know, you and I wrote the story we're looking at now, which is where so it's not the actual soft top that's rubbing the paint off. It's the mechanism. Apparently, from what we've seen, I haven't experienced an actual Bronco to be able to check this out, but there's some lateral play in the mechanism that is causing it to rub as you put the top down or put it back up. But, you know, the thing is that being an early adopter of a vehicle or of literally any product kind of comes with certain issues. Like, everyone wants to be the first to own something, but unfortunately, when you're manufacturing things, these little things pop up. And something I saw on some of the forums that we've looked at is that the excuse, or maybe not excuse, the explanation that people are presenting is that Ford hasn't built a soft top vehicle like this in quite a while. You know, obviously there's Mustangs and stuff like that that are soft tops, but this is kind of a different thing.
But I mean, how long was this in development? How long was this in testing? I have to think, well, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't think. I have to think that some of these issues, especially the whistling, would have cropped up, especially with how common we're seeing it being reported. I mean,
maybe, I wonder if they switched suppliers in the pandemic too, in some instances too. Chris Bruce was right though. I mean, this is a thing that comes along with being an early adopter.
Yep.
You remember the first year of the C8, it looked like somebody was absolutely hammered. Whoever did the stitching on the passenger side is kind of going off at a roller coaster angle.
the stitching, the missing bolts from the front fascia, yeah, from some of the vents. Yep.
The only other thing I have to say is I am sorry, Ford, but this is the flip side of your car being popular. We gave it all the attention in the world on the way up. And, you know, the car is phenomenal. But when there's a spotlight on a vehicle, you get stories like this. If this, we wouldn't have even reported on it if somebody said, oh, there's an Alfa Romeo that has a wind leak that's causing a squeak. Nobody would have cared.
Alfa would come back and say, that's part. No.
It's great.
That's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. That's
built a feature. That in specifically. It's part of the charm. Moving on. But
no, you're both right. We are talking about this because there is a spotlight on Bronco. And I mean, come on. Would you accept these kinds of flaws in a $175,000 vehicle? I mean, let's be realistic here, folks. Come on. These are selling for $175,000 on eBay. No, they're not.
I don't know.
They're listed.
They're not. And B,
they're listed for $175,000.
Yeah, we went through this last week, dude.
We need to have a real conversation if there's any proven sale of these things in the six figures, because that is just inappropriate.
Oh, no, there are proven sales in the six figures. We looked at them last week. I think
according to eBay, there are, I think we had two or three completed sales. Yeah. That now, of course, we can't contact
the owners.
We don't know
if the buyer followed through and signed the check, but they at least sold for that much.
I can't think like a wealthy person because I'm not one, but I guess if you want it now, you want it now, right? I mean, waiting is not a thing that people of means like to do, so I guess that makes sense. But it's worth its MSRP, I think, if you pay
it. I totally think it is. I totally think it is. And yeah, I mean, roofs, the soft top getting a hole rubbed into it, that seems a little bit more than just like a first year thing to me. I mean, I have to believe you would have been doing a lot of close scrutiny on how your soft top is fitting up. But Clint, I mean, like you said, maybe it is a supplier thing because they were having issues with the roofs, but
and they're having to switch suppliers during the pandemic too, based on availability. So I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but Ford's a reliable automaker. They'll come out with fixes for these things as necessary, and hopefully go straight to the customer with them.
I would agree, and really, in the grand scheme, I mean, this is kind of small potato stuff. I mean, this isn't like CVT transmissions going bad on certain Blueoval hatchbacks from years past. This
seriously,
you know, this so far the Bronco, we haven't heard anything mechanically of issue. So hey, Ford, keep up the good work.
Yeah, and fix the problems that crop up. Your buyers deserve that, but
yeah,
we understand that problems are going to happen too.
Yep,
cool car, lives up to the hype.
Cool. Let's move on to some other hype that we're getting from listeners, and we appreciate your comments.
Yeah, we actually got quite a few comments this last week. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, just due to what we expect are going to be time constraints and talking about our second topic this week, I'm only going to be able to read one of them right now. But as always, thanks to everyone. So yes. This one actually came from the site. I'm going to spell it. I assume it's Elric is his username, E-L-R-I-K. But yeah. So great episode again, guys. Thanks. Mr. Bruce's take on the lack of interesting Japanese cars caught my attention. I have two questions. What characteristics make an interesting Japanese car? And Elric, I'm going to kind of ignore that part because we are going to, in a roundabout way, get to that in the second segment. Mm-hmm. And the part I think we should answer is, what would you do to make the current generation Supra interesting?
I don't mean to laugh. Sorry. No,
that's okay. That's okay. Bruce, do you want to jump into this? If I remember correctly, I actually responded to this comment.
I'll go ahead and go first. I think the major issue with the new Supra is actually the interior because it looks so much like a BMW. The exterior, you know, between the Supra and the Z4, you can't really tell them, you know, you can't tell that they're related. But then you step inside and it's nothing but BMW parts bin stuff. And it just kind of gives you pause as the people that are going to be buying the Supra are enthusiasts and they're going to know what the interior of a Z4 or just a BMW in general looks like versus the interior of a Toyota product. And I think that Toyota could have gone a super long way just by using some of their own tech in the interior. If they had shared engines, that wouldn't have been an issue. If they had shared platforms, it wouldn't have been an issue at all. We saw that with the latest Mazda Miata and the Abarth 124 Spider. Like, those are the same platform, but they were differentiated enough that we never really saw people complaining about the comparison between the two of them. It's just that when... I just keep coming back to it. When you step into the new Supra, you're like, am I in a BMW? And I think, well, to me, that is the issue.
Well, the answer there, Bruce, is yes, you are in a BMW.
That was built in Germany.
I mean, Clint, do you have a take on this before I go?
Yeah. Can I start with a random aside and say, as the person who has to sit in meetings and advocate for all of our digital media, we love when people reach out to us, and you can do so podcast@motorone.com. You can email us or interact with us on any of our main social media platforms at motorone.com. You guys do a great job each week of directly taking comments from listeners, readers, if you're on the website, but please send us your questions, send us your complaints. We address the former, we laugh at the latter.
We sometimes address the latter too, but
sometimes address the latter if there's actual credence to them, I'll say that.
Yeah.
I'm maybe in the minority in that I like the Supra. I like it a lot. You can't drive it with the windows down, but apart from those things, and I'll also devil's advocate, it's the nicest interior of any modern Toyota, even if it is a BMW. You ever think about it that way?
No, I never thought about it that way.
I never thought about it that way either.
I'm trying to give it brownie points that I think it deserves. The 6-cylinder in that thing sounds absolutely sweet, and I was ecstatic to drive it. I also think the outside of it looks fantastic. Talk about a car that we had also overhyped on the front end, the Supra. Oh, by the time we actually saw it, like, we've seen this thing. I feel like I've gone to dinner with the Supra at this point. But you know what? Like, they brought it out. We finally got behind the wheel, and I think it's great. Could it be more exciting? Yes. Is the BMW kinship a letdown? Yes, and only because they took it a little too far. They needed to do some more things on the inside. It's different seats, and it's a JBL audio system. Other than that, it is legitimately a Z4. So they could have lessened that a little bit, but at the same time, just completely on its own. It's a great car to drive. It's tons of fun to interact with. I think they'll fall down in price enough to where they're going to be great buys on the secondhand market at some point. And they chose that BMW inline six because you can beat it with a hammer and throw it off of a building and it will keep running until the end of time. And add 20 more pounds of boost to it if you want to. So it's really reliable too. And I like that about it.
No, all very good points. I think it's a great car. I think it's an exciting car to drive. I don't think it necessarily needs to be more exciting. For the Supra to be more interesting for me, I would prefer Toyota actually be a manufacturer and not a coach builder for BMW. Because when you think about it, that's really what it is. It's Toyota. True. Toyota is a coach builder here. It's BMW underneath all of that Toyota skin. And Bruce, you touched on this. It loses its identity as a Supra.
It does. I mean, the origin story of that car starts with the lead engineer flying to Germany and having a meeting. It's true. Like, we've seen that in the reporting that came out afterwards, and that's how it kind of started out. But they do it with BRZ. They do it sort of a Toyota thing, so to speak. I think more powerful versions of it will be exciting. It's not done yet. I don't think they're really confirmed, but we can assume that you'll get an M3, M4 engine version, probably close to 500 horsepower. They'll probably call it the Gremlin edition. And I can't wait. That'd be a great car to drive.
So if you throw water on it, will it multiply?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that reference going over your head, Clint? Tell me it's not.
I'm very old and I'm able to understand all of your references without a problem.
I got it, Smith. I own them both on Blu-ray.
I got them on VHS.
Next podcast is just going to be showing everybody our Slack messages where I just get shamed for not knowing references that start below 1990.
No, see,
Smith didn't know about Depeche Mode. Clint didn't know about Depeche Mode today.
Wait, what?
Which is a band that's so relevant still that everybody talks about it.
When did this happen?
This morning.
That wasn't me. Okay. We need to have a discussion.
That wasn't me. I'm being totally slandered. You. No.
You didn't know about personal Jesus.
I promise you, this was not me, whatever you're referencing.
Okay.
It might have been Jeff.
I'll drop it. But I'll look at the Slack log tomorrow and get back to you.
We can get the receipts, but for what it's worth, I don't know what you're talking about. But I didn't have those messages.
I just need to point out, Clint's life is so amazing. He cannot be bothered with like this ancient pop culture. That's how cool he is. Me and Bruce, we're just nerds. Look behind me on the video. I'm a freaking nerd, right?
It's good. So, it's good to have dynamic personalities. Sometimes I'm just a little one-dimensional. It's my fault.
What other comments we got?
I was only going to hit the one. Well, here. We can do a quick one. Hold on. Okay.
Supra. So it's funny how I stopped thinking about that car.
So this is from Benny. yes. Benny emailed us. Let's talk about Benny. Chime in on the possibility of a Camaro EV sedan. My theory.
Benny.
Well, there might happen.
This is a good theory, though. This is worth mentioning.
Yeah. My theory is that GM may feel brave enough to put the Camaro name on a sedan because of the new Blazer, despite being the worst, that's all in capitals, name for an official crossover ever. It's selling very well. 94,600 units in 2020.
Trailblazer,
if off-road purists can't bring down the Blazer, then there's reason to believe that GM could, again, all quotes, get away with naming a performance sedan Camaro. Just a theory, though. Love the podcast. I don't know why y'all don't have more listeners, because you two help me get through my hour-long commute each day. Thanks for like the backhanded compliment, Benny, but I appreciate it.
And well, hey, we're happy to help you get through your commute every day.
Absolutely.
We are gaining a stronger audience. We're only on episode 31 of this crazy train.
This is 31.
We're getting more listeners each week. So podcast@motorone.com is our email. Get us at Motor One Podcast on YouTube. We're also on every major podcast platform. So wherever you go to listen, you can follow us. You can subscribe. That will help bring more listeners in to bring us these comments. And I found this comment particularly interesting with the tie to Blazer.
Our friend here is right on with this commentary.
Maybe Trailblazer
is selling like absolute hotcakes, and it there's nothing cool about it as a three cylinder.
I don't find it attractive at all, but no, it's horrible. Somehow it's selling. So maybe there's nothing in a name. Who knows?
Speaking of cars we forgot about, when was the last time either of you made lunch or woke up in the morning and thought about a Camaro?
Probably more often than you thought.
Really?
You know, I mean, maybe. I mean, I was at that 80s and 90s show a couple of weeks ago. There was a really nice looking.
That was last week, the episode. So it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, come on, Bruce.
We're here.
I'm already fast forwarding through time as it is. No, I mean, there was a nice third gen at that show. Mm-hmm. And it just had me thinking a little bit. And then I happened to see, like, ever since that show, now I've been paying more attention to other cars running around. It's like, you know, there are some really nice third gen Camaros and Firebirds running around here. I wouldn't mind picking one up. Get rid of the Mustang. Grow out the mullet a little bit.
I hate to put you on the spot, but there was an article that we did when they said they were killing the Camaro. And I remember it because I spent a long time in Photoshop, photoshopping the Camaro into a graveyard. But in that story, I wonder if we ever reference the possibility of it becoming electric. I don't think electric sedan was ever a thought in anybody's mind. But
we have a story of Camaro electric. I think the rumor was 2023.
That would be the end of its life. And at the rate we're going, where they've given it absolutely zero love lately, that would not shock me in the slightest.
Shock. I see what you did there.
There we go. And bam! That's that horrible color that's on it. The highlighter green is called shock, I think. In GM land now, a GMC is now a Hummer. Cadillacs are going electric. There we go. There's your story
This is 2019.
For anybody watching.
July 1st, 2019. Where did we source this? Oh, Car Buzz, apparently. Oh, but we talked to Chevy. We will not engage in speculation about future product, blah, blah, blah. I've heard that a million times.
Yeah, so that means we can say whatever we want. And I think, yeah, it'll happen. I like that interpretation.
It would be dumb not to. I mean, we know electric is the future. So if Camaro is going to exist at all, it's going to be in some sort of electric format. And you know what, people? That's fine. That's fine.
What do you think of sedan, though? Is that sacrilege?
So we addressed that last week. Smith, you and I had no problem about the Camaro being electric. It's the making it a sedan that you and I were both complaining about.
Well, I mean, it comes down to the same argument with Mustang Mach-E that I've made a gazillion times. I won't go back into again. The Camaro's formula has always been the swoopy roofline, rear-wheel drive, two-door vehicle.
It's been Chevy's pony car.
That formula has never changed. Engines have changed. You could get four cylinders, six cylinders, eight cylinders, but that core formula has never changed. And switching to a sedan now changes that core formula. Yep. So
and they took the engine out of a Corvette and put it behind the seats, and now everybody is all on board with it because it's phenomenal. So
not everybody.
Rumor for 30 years.
Yeah,
I almost swore. For 30 years.
Sorry, there's also a wicked lightning storm out my window right now, so I feel like I'm getting this really dramatic lighting to go along with this commentary.
Sweet. So you have to say something diabolical. At this point, something like that.
I've driven a few Camaros. They are, as everybody says, phenomenal to drive. You can't see out of the back of them so much, and I think they're appalling to look at. Not that anybody asked for that, but I'm here and we're rambling about cars, so might as well throw it in. Revitalize it, make it an electric sedan. Mark me down as down for this idea because there's nothing else they can do with it to make it good for the future, honestly.
Yeah, and I think our discussion last week was, is it better to let the name die as opposed to trying to reinvent it into something else? And my argument was, you know what? I think maybe you need to let it die.
Really?
Because it stood for one thing. And if you reinvent it, it's dead anyways. What it originally was, it's dead. Nobody cares about Hummer.
Are you kidding? They brought that back and everybody lost their damn
Hummer
minds.
Still kind of existed because at least it was a military vehicle. So it's still,
Hummer, I mean, it's still sticking to its formula, a big ostentatious off-roader.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to take off-road.
Except for the formula suddenly has a whole lot of spice in it for no reason out of nowhere. You know, the core of it is different, but I don't know. GM, I never pretend to know what they're doing from week to week, but they could get creative.
I'm not sure GM knows special. What they're doing.
I don't think any of the big three have they like to surprise us with stuff.
Yeah, so. This could be cool.
Yep.
Well, speaking of cool, what an awesome way to segue into our second half of the program here, because we were talking about NSX.
We were talking about Japanese cars.
Right. And it got us all a little nostalgic. Okay. If the NSX is going away, what are some Japanese performance cars that we would like to see come back? Maybe come back with an internal combustion engine that has one last hurrah before going electric, or just being reinvented as an electric performance vehicle.
Yeah.
And I feel like the answer, the universal answer to this question is Evo. So if
I didn't
if anybody,
no, it's not.
Evo's not on my list either.
But come on, even the Mitsubishi shareholders are like, we need to bring the Evo back, and Mitsubishi's, I don't think so. Okay, well, hey, if nobody has Evo, then hey, let's break into it. Let's go over our picks. Who wants to start?
Honorable mention to the Evo. Fantastic car. It is sad that it's no longer around for sure.
I mean, I feel like that's the Japanese performance vehicle that almost everybody wants back in some manner. They want it back.
I don't, maybe. Mitsubishi's in a weird place. Anyway, okay. So for listeners that you need to know this right now, these are all going to be surprises. We all picked two.
Yeah.
And none of us discussed them beforehand. So...
Yeah, and I think mine are horrible.
No. I don't think there's a wrong answer. Maybe there's a bad way to argue it, but there's no wrong answer.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first? Who feels confident in their choice?
I think Mr. Simone should go first, since he is
the guest.
He's the esteemed guest.
That's polite of me. I appreciate that.
Sure. Just wait. Let it rip.
The first one is not controversial. The Subaru WRX hatchback. Give me the damn hatchback back. It looked way better than the sedan, way more practical. Anybody who didn't want a GTI did want that car. You could get it with a stick, all that good stuff. Mud flaps on the back of it. Like, the hatchback ruled. I remember wanting that car so badly when I couldn't even dream of affording one in high school. And I just thought it was the greatest thing. I mean, I love the quad exhaust on the back of it. I love the way it looked. Period. And the sedan, we're going to see a new one at the upcoming New York Auto Show.
It's going to be boring as sin.
I mean, STI will be good to drive. It'll do all the good things we want it to, because Subaru knows how to build a performance car. But give me the hatchback. I mean, I'm biased because I love hatchbacks and I love performance hatchbacks, but I don't understand why they got rid of it. I think they could almost convince people that it's somewhat of a wagon or a lifted crossover or whatever and sell more of them.
Do you have a specific era of hatchback that you're specifically aiming for?
Yeah, probably like a 2012 model year. Does that sound right?
That's about right.
I mean, they had those in there. Let me see.
Preferably in gray with the mud flaps.
Is there really two generations of the hatchback?
Yeah. Right?
Otherwise, it's always been a sedan.
Yeah.
Or a coupe, or however you want to say it.
I think that's right. I think I also played with that hatchback in one of the Need for Speed games when I was younger and really fell in love with it, crashed it into a lot of metaphorical walls. That's it.
Yeah.
Look at that. And that's the rally spec too. That's fantastic.
That was a good looking car. It's not my favorite generation WRX, to be honest,
but I also like it.
I'm still a first generation.
Sure.
I'm a first generation guy.
I like the wild guys too.
But that was a pretty good car. I would have to agree. But, I mean, isn't it kind of trendy to get rid of your hatchbacks because they're hatchbacks? I would be happy if Subaru brought it back and just called it the lift back.
It's not,
or they
like
could call it the sport back. It's still the same thing, right?
I mean, Ford Focus RS is gone, but Ford doesn't make cars, in quotes, anymore. Honda Civic Type R is kicking ass, taking names, and the next generation will be great as well, I'm sure. Volkswagen GTI still exists, thank God, and everything that matters in the automotive world. So I think there still is a place for it, devil's advocate.
Okay, I mean...
mostly agree with those statements.
Yeah. It's acceptable, although... we still have a WRX. It's just not a hatchback. So I don't know if I consider that cheating per se, but
no, I don't think it is.
Yeah,
no.
But the Civic hatch is better than the Civic sedan, just objectively. So yeah. I think in general, hatchbacks are slightly better than their sedan counterparts.
Okay, fair enough. Is that Bruce, fair? Why don't you go next here?
Okie doke. So I had to get creative here. Because anyone who has watched or listened to Rambling About Cars,
they will know that whatever you're about to pick is also my pick, probably.
Oh well, there's maybe that.
We really didn't share these with each other ahead of time, so I'm curious.
No. Yeah. So, but the natural two I wanted to pick were Subaru SVX and Mazda RX-7. But I thought that was too obvious for me.
Sure.
So I had to like kind of move on to a different place.
Challenge yourself a little bit.
So I was thinking about it.
And I'm legitimately nervous right now.
So I shot this pick 2 weeks ago when I was at that show, and it's kind of got my gear spinning. Why isn't there a new Toyota MR2?
That's You're not the pick. Only one to ever think that.
Two seats. You could do it as an EV easily. Just throw the electric motor in the back, you know.
Yeah, the MR2 was never really defined by its
powerful
engine.
Yeah. Right.
God, well, that looks great. Yeah. Don't get rid of that yet, please. That looks fantastic.
Well, here, if
seriously, also, that's in
the interior is very, very 80s. It is probably one of the most angular interiors you will ever see. Yeah.
I'm right impressed, here. Bruce. I'm supposed to be a little nitpicky, but I can't. That is such a logical.
That's fantastic.
That's such a logical choice for Toyota.
But, you know, there's nothing.
And Toyota should build it themselves. Don't let. Well,
there's that, too.
I mean, don't get like a Nissan Leaf and change some body panels and call it the MR2. Toyota, you can build this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you make a two-seat coupe T-top, whatever you want to call it, and you throw the engine in the back here. If you give me just 1 second, here's the T-top version. This is the second gen where it kind of became the styling is definitely Ferrari inspired. I would say it's kind of a baby Ferrari 348.
I thought the second gen was just fantastic. I mean, I like the first gen, but
they're
second
both
gen-
great. The first one is like that super razor sharp thing, and the second one is just nothing but curves.
Oh, that's so good. Have you guys driven either of those?
I have not.
I haven't driven a first gen, but I haven't either. I've ridden as a passenger. I mean, it's a small car. It's kind of cramped, but
my kind of thought was
it's fun. It's just fun. That's the best way to describe it. Is just fun. It doesn't try to be anything more than just fun.
Yeah.
We were talking a few weeks ago that the cheapest true convertible on the market right now is the Miata. And it makes me like Toyota could make a Miata competitor and, you know, okay, make it an electric Miata competitor as opposed to selling it for, I think the Miata was like 24 or 25 it started at. Sell something like this, started at, you know, maybe 35 even. I think there's would be people to buy something like that.
And they would happily point you in the direction of a GR86.
Maybe. I'm not saying I'm in product planning. I'm just saying what Japanese sports car would I revive? And kind of after I picked the first two I would think of, I think MR2 would be a good way to go.
I love that answer.
I love it, too. And I think it's rather poignant considering our discussion today. I mean, Toyota, the 86, that's kind of a Subaru. Supra, that's kind of a BMW. Toyota, man, just bring us back the MR2, build it yourselves, make it all electric. We know you know electricity. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't believe that I didn't think of this, especially over this past weekend, because I met up with an old friend at a local car show that I was just walking through. And he told me that his wife, she was actually just gifted an MR2.
Oh, wow. What generation? That, what
model? I think it was a first generation.
Ooh. We MR2. Might have to talk about that after the show because they're small. I could fit that behind my Mini in the garage.
Yeah. So, and the more I think about it, the more it seems like a no-brainer. Toyota could do that and just have a fun little runabout that's uniquely theirs and not anybody else's. They can have their performance identity, and that wouldn't be a bad way to get it back, you know.
Right. Before you go, just this came into my head. If I'm not mistaken, MR2 is mid-engine, run about 2 seats. So why not put an electric motor back there, and you can still call it the MR2. It wouldn't hurt.
There you go.
All right, you go.
My turn.
Yep.
I was so afraid, Bruce, that you were going to choose this. I was expecting you to be like, you know, I had to be a little creative because I had to be a little creative too.
Yeah.
Because I mean, yeah, it's easy to say Evo, or it's easy for me at least to say SVX or Eclipse.
I was close to picking the SVX. I nixed the RX-7 because I thought it was too obvious, but I'm like, SVX.
I kept coming back to Mitsubishi because I feel like Mitsubishi, they're the ones that really need to revitalize themselves in a manner like this. So for those not on YouTube who are listening and are like, what the hell is Smith talking about? I present the Mitsubishi Starion. One of, I think, the coolest and most underrated sports cars from the 1980s. In America, we had it with a 2.6 liter engine. And I think they were only good for like 145, 150 horse. It wasn't a particularly fast car. In Japan,
you could get a turbo version, right?
Yeah, yeah, turbocharged. And in Japan, they were closer to, I think, about 200 horsepower you could get.
That sounds right.
But I mean, they had the pop-up headlights, just the angular 80s style with that fast back. I thought they always just looked fantastic. Of course, in the United States, we also had them as the Dodge Conquest, and then the Chrysler Conquest and the Plymouth Conquest. They were very conquesty. I don't know if that's a word. It's a word now. I just created a word, conquesty. And I mean, it's also one of those cars where it wasn't defined by its engine. I mean, when you say super, everybody says, you know, 2JZ. It was a car that wasn't really defined by its engine. So if you wanted to reinvent this as something all electric, go for it.
And Starion is a good name. You reach for the stars. Like that's there's a good futuristic name.
It's got this sci-fi name to it.
Yeah.
And Starion has something with electric power. It's sort of like lightning. I just feel like Starion, it just kind of rolls off as something you would expect to be electric. And correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce. Or maybe I should ask Clint this. Clint, what car did Jackie Chan drive in Cannonball Run 2?
I don't even know they did a Cannonball Run 2.
I knew it.
The first one was fine. Why go back? Why do it again?
Yeah, you're not necessarily wrong. I think he drove a Starion in Cannonball Run 2.
Well, they gave Jackie Chan the car with 150 horsepower. They didn't like him very much in that.
No. It had like a jet engine or something in the back that could
pop
up.
That's what it would need, because this thing does not look very fast.
What do you mean it doesn't look very fast?
I don't like that.
It is like the door wedge of power. I mean, it's got that sleek slope.
Here you go. Here is a shot from the film.
The fastback design.
It is clearly not a stock Starion.
Look at that thing with the louvers on the back windows.
Looks like a Fox Body Mustang.
You're talking to Smith. That's not a bad thing.
What's wrong with the Fox Body Mustang? Oh my God.
Triggered. They should have had him in a Fox Body. There's some cool graphics on the side of it, I guess. But this thing does not do it for me in the slightest.
There was a little bit of product placement going on in Cannonball Run 2.
Jackie Chan had this weird relationship with Mitsubishi.
He did.
Throughout the late 80s and early 90s, in his films, he drove a ton of Mitsubishis.
A ton.
I'd love to see him in an Outlander.
Who Am I? I think had the famous scene with the evil
that edited
four.
Out of a YouTube video because of a copyright strike.
We ran it in one of our videos. So yeah, we're not sharing any videos, but
no.
Mitsubishi Starion. That's my first choice.
Oh, dude, wait, hold on 1 second. I got a photo I got to share. Hold on.
There's a 5 minute limit on Starion talk. Starts exploding.
Here's Mr.
Oh,
Chan.
Oh my God.
Look at that.
In his Mitsubishi
Starion.
Oof.
Clint, okay. you gotta watch Cannonball Run too, man.
I don't know if I do.
You do, just to see Frank Sinatra racing Sammy Davis Jr. in a Dodge Daytona.
That's not most the first of that one. Sentence. I don't.
No, that was the boy. Second one.
Okay,
that was the second one where it's
which
like
which one is Dean Martin and I forget his name.
This Dom DeLuise. Direction is I want this going. One?
Dean Martin and Dom DeLuise are in one of them, or they're in like one of the.
No, they're in both of them.
Okay,
they're in both. I only remember the first Cannonball Run movie was actually surprisingly accurate to the actual.
I know
to that actual event. The second one, yeah, it was just kind of.
First one had the Countach, right?
First one had the Countach.
That's all.
Raul Julia, right? He rips the thing. It's Raul Julia.
Yeah. I think it had a spoiler on the front, if I'm not mistaken, too.
No, that's Speed. That was Speed Zone, which was sort of supposed to be Cannonball Run 3, but it was even more ridiculous. Anyways, do you guys have a second pick?
I do, but yeah, Smith or it's Clint. You got to go. I'm looking up the Raul Julia filmography.
My second pick was an even split, and I did not do my homework very well because we said Japanese performance cars. It was an even split between the Honda S2000, which is the logical choice and an absolute winner all the way around. Nobody can argue with that. Or all of Scion, which is not
Scion's
car. Full disclosure: my first car was a Scion XB. And I loved it with all my heart. And I loved that Scion was weird and that brand of vehicle, that class of vehicle was not traditionally exciting at all. But it was for people who wanted to be just a little bit weird.
My condolences.
There could have been room for a more performance-y Scion for what it's worth. They got close with the FRS. But I think reviving that for the future could be akin to something performance-oriented and very cool. My final thought on the matter with this topic before you guys get to your picks, I think we're in a golden age of Japanese performance right now. Toyota's making a freaking hypercar that they have to produce because of Le Mans. There's, you know, more V8s getting crammed into Lexus vehicles. I think there are all sorts of really cool performance Japanese cars that we're seeing. I love it. Supra's back. I mean, come on, everywhere you look.
Here's the thing. I can't afford any of those. And I you know, I'm a.
You can afford a Civic Type R probably ish.
Okay, you're right.
I saved a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, you're right.
You could afford a GR86. You could afford a BRZ.
Oh, well, those are the same car, Clint.
I don't know. I'm running out of things off the top of my head.
Well, it's the golden age, though. There should be a laundry list. You know, where's our Eclipse? Where's our 3000 GT?
Mitsubishi's hanging on by a thread, and they need to make crossovers. We have a new Nissan Z. Look, that'll be cool. There's all sorts of cool stuff going on right now.
I don't know if the new Nissan Z is going to be cool or not. I'm worried it's going to be a 370Z with a different body.
It is.
I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that it'll be cool.
It looks great.
I'm still not sure about the golden age thing. We do have more out there than there's been since the 90s. But I come back to Mitsubishi just because my heart is there with the Evo gone. I feel like you can't have a golden age without some sort of Evo.
Okay.
Or something from Mitsubishi.
I'll have to do more research
to keep things going. So I got super creative with my second pick. I technically picked a car that never went into production, but should have. Technically, two cars that never went into production that should have. I went with the Nissan MID4, which was...
I don't even know what this is.
So yeah, it looks like a Testarossa.
So this is the MID4 2, and since you guys aren't super familiar with this, I will share. Our pal Adrian, he wrote a Concepts We Forgot story about this. In 85 and 87, Nissan made a pair of concepts called the MID4. And so you would think that means, oh, it's a mid-mounted four-cylinder engine. No, no, no. It has a mid-mounted engine, but four-wheel, aka all-wheel drive. The original one was a 3-liter V6. The second one was a twin-turbo 3-liter V6. And they look fantastic. Even today, in my eyes, they look good. Like, they're very much that vision of kind of 80s, late 80s style, even though they're kind of from the mid 80s. And I kind of wish Nissan would just kind of get its stuff together and do something wild make a Nissan Halo car that's not the GTR that's been around for, what, 12 years, 13 years now, whatever it is. Like, it's been around so long. Do something new. And so I would love to see Nissan kind of pick up this concept and do a mid-4 Type 3 or mid-4 3 and do that. No, mid-engine, all-wheel drive. I'd love to see it.
Silence.
I hear crickets.
It looks cool.
I mean, I've never even heard of this car. Bruce, you continually amaze me with your obscure vehicle knowledge. I am thoroughly impressed.
I love the mirrors. They look like modern BMW M3 mirrors.
They kind of look like F40 mirrors to me, but yeah.
I mean, depending on, you're scrolling through these pictures on YouTube, which is why you should go to Motor One Podcast on YouTube so you can catch us there, so you can see these things that we're talking about. Depending on the image that goes past, it's like, okay, it's Testarossa. Now it's a little bit XJ220.
Now it's a little NSX. Yeah. Now it's NSX. That I've got up there.
Yeah. It's just like,
and keep in mind, this is 87. Yeah. So the NSX wasn't, this predates NSX.
I almost see like a little bit of Ford Probe in the front. This is gonna kind of keep me up tonight thinking about this car.
This looks great.
Okay. That's Dodge Stealth right there.
That one. Yeah, it is.
I'm seeing everything. Holy crap.
You're hallucinating.
You would be horrible in a police sketch situation.
The hair was a little bit shorter. No, a little bit long. Actually, there was no hair. Yeah. Yeah. I would not be good in that situation. That's interesting choice. I don't think Nissan has the funds or the moxie to do it right now.
I don't. Yeah, I agree.
We'll just be happy with a 400Z. I think the 400Z will be all right.
Yeah. But here's the interior. You know, it's very 80s, but it also looks good. Like, this looks like, you look at this and this doesn't look like a concept. This looks like a car that could have gone in production in 1987 and been ready to go.
Yeah, it's cool.
It does look very, very finished for a concept. Mm-hmm. I would agree.
It does. Yeah. It looks like they had it close.
Okay, Smith, you're up.
Last one. Clint already stole my thunder a little bit on this one. I love the S2000. I so love the S2000.
How could you not?
Yeah.
It is impossible. I hate to say this, but I know a lot of Mustang people that just think it's ridiculous because it doesn't have 8 cylinders. And I want to slap them every time. And it's just like this thing. Few cars. In fact, this is the only car I've ever driven where you hear the just overused cliche of, oh, it fits like a glove. This car really feels like it fits like a freaking glove. When you get behind the wheel, it's one of those cars where you really feel like you are part of it. Like, it's an extension of you just moving around. Honda just had magic with the S2000. And listening to that engine hit 8,500, 9,000 RPMs is glorious. I so miss it. I think, and now this is one where I don't know if you could redo it as an electric vehicle, because that engine and that exhaust note, it's so tied into that car. I would love to see like Honda's last hurrah with the internal combustion engine be a new S2000.
Yeah. And for anyone listening, we don't usually give buying advice, but right now, if 20K for a very nice one, 15K, maybe, if depending on your area, 12 or 13, if you've got that money, you can still get a really nice one of these. And, you know, send me a tip later on PayPal or something, because these things are going to skyrocket in price.
Yep.
And, you know, you can still get them. They're climbing back up, but they're kind of in that trough of the depreciation curve. This is one not to sleep on. If you think you want one, now is the time to get one.
God, and they look good. They look so good.
Yeah, they look good. They feel good. They sound good. This particular car that we're looking at right now on YouTube is actually owned by a person that volunteers down at the Air and Space Museum that I've volunteered at here in Rapid City from time to time. So he has strict orders that when he's thinking about selling it, to give me a call.
That's good.
That's such a gorgeous car. He doesn't drive it nearly enough, in my opinion. I mean, I hate to sound like a fanboy. There aren't many cars that I fanboy out over, but the S2000 is and will always be one of those cars.
I agree. 100%.
And Smith, I think you and I actually referenced this in an earlier episode, but just look at, by modern standards, how pure and Spartan that interior is. Like, that little cover is hiding the radio, so there's no infotainment screen. The radio is hidden unless you want to see it. Otherwise, it is an instrument cluster, a gear shift, and some HVAC controls. And that's it.
Yep.
It's great. It really is.
We couldn't call it the last pure sports car, because I think the Miata is going to hold that title.
Agreed.
But Honda, before the internal combustion engine goes away completely, a limited run S2000, maybe just 2 or 3 years, give it a silly high revving engine. It doesn't have to have a gazillion horsepower. It just has to have that original fits like a glove feel. I'll use that cliche over and over and over for the S2000 because it's one of the very few cars ever built where it actually fits.
And that's the thing that Mary's
Type S engine. Take that V6 and shove it in there. Will that fit? Probably not.
Make it fit.
If not, I don't know. Take the CTR engine.
That's the one to do.
Mm-hmm.
Take the CTR engine, take the turbo off of it, and put on some new heads so it'll rev. And yeah.
Well, we have a plan. Should we start selling them?
Sure. Let's do it. What's your plan, everybody? Podcast@motorone.com is our email. Send us your opinions on your Japanese performance cars that you would like to see resurrected. Maybe resurrected has a new electric vehicle. Maybe resurrected one last time, last dance with internal combustion power before it goes away for good. Podcast@motorone.com. You can also get us in the comments on YouTube on our article that goes up at motorone.com every Friday. Whew. Bruce, what am I missing?
Not much, man. As always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Whenever you happen to be listening to this, we appreciate you. We appreciate every view, every comment, every like, every subscribe, every whatever. Like, this show is an extension of Smith and I and whoever our guest is, Clint tonight, just talking about cars. And that's what we want it to be. We want it to feel like a bunch of people in the garage, sitting around the bar stools, whatever, talking about cars. And that's what we want this to be. But we appreciate that you listen. We appreciate that we are entertaining enough that you like us.
Very much appreciate having Mr. Clint Simone with us here.
Of course.
Clint's knowledge on cars is probably far, far beyond ours. And he is a true master of ceremony. So thanks for brightening up this, this podcast, if only for a little while.
Anytime you guys want to have me, I appreciate that. And I look forward to doing a lot more stuff with Motor One Video. So if you're here in the podcast channel, you can follow us on the main channel as well, Motor One US. We're all a big symbiotic family. We all work on all of this content. And like Chris Bruce just said, out of the love of cars and the love of getting to cover this industry, especially as things keep getting crazier here with gas becoming electric and things like that. Always things to talk about. And I appreciate you having me.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
SpinQuest Social Casino. The presents are open, and you're over the in-laws. It's a perfect time to grab your phone and play SpinQuest.com with live dealer blackjack, craps, and a ton of slots. And here's a great deal for the holiday, a $30 coin pack for $10. And if you're hearing this ad, you can play right now on SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.